Hey everybody, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I literally record right here in my vehicle while I'm driving back from work as a high school instructional coach. So I apologize for the sound quality, but I'm excited to change the game with you each and every week. These podcasts are about 11 minutes long while I'm stuck in bumper to bumper traffic, and it's a good time to sort of do a brain dump and a brainstorm with teachers all over the country and all over the planet as we're talking about ways to change the game in our classrooms. This week, we're talking about suspense and surprise, and both of them. And the similarities and the differences and how we can use them in our classrooms. But before I get to that stuff, let me put you in a little bit of suspense right now and say, we'll be back to that in 30 seconds. But first, some housekeeping notes. If you like what you're hearing, mash that subscribe button or give a nice rating on your podcast app of choice. It helps other people find the podcast, which is awesome. And there are new episodes every Monday. You can check out any of the back catalog or you can message me anytime on Twitter. I'm at MeehanEDU, Meehan like my last name and EDU like teaching. Or you can hit me up on my website, which is adrenalinerush.com, which is all about game-changing student engagement and ways to change the game in our classrooms. My first book is called Adrenaline Rush, and it's available now. And it's about ways to design our lesson plans so it feels more like game plans inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. Talk about things that have suspense and surprise, right? All three of these things are great at those. So let's talk about these two concepts today in conjunction and how we can use them in coordination with one another. So suspense and surprise. You might hear those words used maybe interchangeably. Like often we'll use the phrase dialogue and discussion interchangeably. Like, hey, I want to have a dialogue with you, or I want to have a discussion with you. They don't actually mean the same thing. They mean something slightly different. A dialogue is meant to be a even conversation where there is no right or wrong answers. It's just sort of a shared, everyone gets to express their thoughts, then we come to a deeper understanding through the shared dialogue. Where a discussion comes to us from the root word that gives us the same word for percussion or concussion, and it means like to strike violently or to smash together. So there's a different purpose for having a discussion. Like, you know, you have a boyfriend or girlfriend says, we need to have a discussion, you know, have a talk. That's not like an even talk. That's somebody has to beat you up and say some things that you didn't want to hear. But a dialogue is meant to be like an even exchange of ideas that through words, literally in the Greek dialogos, through words, we are coming to some sort of shared understanding together. And that we use those words interchangeably in the sake of a conversation does change the nature of what the conversation is. And so we can be really clear about how we're using those words in the classroom. But I want to talk about how we're using the words suspense and surprise. Like, we think about these things almost as if we just right-clicked on them when we were having a word written in the Word document. So we can get, like, the nearest synonym for it. And because they both start with S, it's nice and alliterative. Like, oh, this whole class is full of shocks and suspense and surprise. Or like, you know, twists and turns and suspense and surprise. It's nice and alliterative, but it doesn't mean the same thing. I think often people will use those words interchangeably. But if I was to ask you, maybe I should just like ask you, you could pause the podcast right here and ask yourself, like, what is the difference between suspense and surprise? They are similar. They have a lot in common. There's like a Venn diagram where they overlap. But there are things that are unique about each of those. So if you want to pause the podcast here now, you can do that. Or I can just cut to the chase and we can pretend we did it. Alfred Hitchcock, master of suspense, often used those two words in his writing. And what's interesting about Hitchcock, too, is he's not just a director. He's like an auteur. So when he has the understanding of a film, like every last stinking detail of that film is really out of his brain. Not unlike Quentin Tarantino. So every set piece, every prop, every lighting cue, every sound element, every last color that shows up in his films that have color. I thought I was going to be a film writer. I thought I was going to be a screenwriter, and that's actually why I got into teaching. I said to myself I was going to give myself some time away from the school year and then spend the summers just writing. Did not think that I would have time during the school year to get that writing done. And little did I know, I don't have time in the summers to get that writing done either, because that's just teaching, right? It's 24/7. But I studied a lot of Hitchcock in college, and what he says about suspense and surprise is that he'll use them at different times because they have different purposes. He says surprise is when out of nowhere you just drop something on your viewer, catching them off guard. So major spoilers for movies that are like 50 years old, and I apologize for ruining them for you. You can earmuff it or you can pause it here. But like the movie Psycho, I think Janet Leigh's character is a major, major player. Like in Hollywood at the time of Psycho, she's on the level of like Angelina Jolie or Jennifer Aniston level Hollywood celebrity. And so she is cast as the face of this film, Psycho. And famously, there's this shower sequence where she meets her end. I'm very sorry to ruin that for you if you haven't seen that movie already. But that happens like 28 minutes into the movie, which is insane. Like, you would cast somebody who cost you more money than anybody else in the movie, and you would just kill them off, and then spend an hour plus just cleaning up the pieces of this story. And so that's a big surprise. In fact, to market his film, Hitchcock told everybody, like, there's a strict no late admission policy to this movie. And this is back in a time where people actually, you know, listened to movie theaters and played by rules and, you know, respected, you know, the culture of a building. They said, you know, they're not going to play on their cell phones and they're not going to share those things. They're not going to tweet it. It's not unlike the Avengers Endgame, you know, like people did not want to share the spoilers because it was just like not a cool thing to do. So like to tell somebody, hey, Bruce Willis is dead. He's been dead all along. That was like the big one from the 90s. And I guess the Avengers is the one from today. But Psycho is the big one. Like they kind of started this trend of, hey, we're not going to let you into the movie late because you're going to ruin the surprise for everyone. And we don't want that happening. So that's a big surprise. And Hitchcock will often, he said, use surprise early to catch his viewers off guard. Because if you surprise people early, then they're waiting at every turn to see what's going to happen next. Because they never know when it's going to come down on them again. They're like waiting for the shoe to drop. And so he talks about superior and inferior positioning, which people in business or marketing would talk about, like frame control. Like, who is the person who's in charge of this conversation? Who's the person with more information? The person who has more information is in a superior position. And dramatic irony comes when we think we know more than we actually know. And it turns out, surprise, the information has been kind of, there was a sleight of hand played on us all along. So that surprise element early keeps us on the edge of our seats through a whole movie. And what Hitchcock would often do is, he gets a reputation being like the king of violence and the king of like these horror and blood and guts and gore. But really, his films are not particularly bloody. There's not too much grisly or graphic image. In fact, more often than not, it's psychological twists and turns. Because what he's doing is using a surprise early to put you in a place where you're like, oh my goodness, this is a movie in which X can happen. And because X can happen and I know that, I feel like at any moment, X could happen to anybody else. So he surprised you, caught you off guard, and now he sort of triggered you to be on the hyper-aware lookout for other surprises to come. On the flip side of that, we have suspense. And suspense is the exact opposite. Suspense is when we keep somebody in a place where they believe that something is going to happen, but they have no idea when it's going to happen. So in this case, they are in an inferior position. In the frame control, it's the person who's selling versus the person who's buying. This is the person who's buying. Because the suspense is you leaning in saying at any minute, something's going to happen. I know it. I know it. I know it. So to use surprise early in a film, like to kill off a major Hollywood starlet, gets people on the edge of their seats. So then even when the most boring and banal sequence is sort of unfolding afterwards, you're sitting there and you're watching this saying, oh my goodness, what's going to happen next? I don't know. And so to use the movie Psycho as an example, Norman Bates, spoiler, is the killer. Yeah, he was the killer all along. But we don't know that in this movie. So when we see Janet Leigh's character killed, I think her name is Mrs. Crane, Myra Crane, I think is her name. When she's killed, we believe it to be Norman Bates' mom. And so this mother figure, we see like the outline of the silhouette in the shower. We hear the music, ree, 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 ree. We see the blood and the stabbing and oh my God. And then she runs away and we see the blood go down the drain. Fine, fine, fine. But then we hear Norman's voice shouting from the house, mother, no, so much blood, mother. And then we see him run in looking all shocked. And Anthony Perkins does a fantastic job of playing this character where now he has to clean up the mess that was perpetrated by this mother character, or so we are to believe. So we watch in like horror and frozen silence while he like methodically cleans this whole scene up as if he's trying to clean up after his mom's mess because his mom's a crazy person. And so we have this dead body being packed away really delicately as Norman is just shaking his head in disbelief. And he's putting it into the back of his car, and he's trying to take his car into the woods, into a swamp, and he can like sink the car so that you never see the signs of this crime. And through this whole thing, because you just watched a major A-list Hollywood celebrity get killed, you're like, oh my God, this poor guy, I wonder what's going to happen. Will the cops or will someone find him? Will someone pull up? What, you know, what's going to happen? And through this whole scene, you're on the edge of your seat. It's almost more harrowing than the shower sequence itself because it's terrifying because you think that something bad can happen to anybody. If they could kill off a Hollywood A-lister, then what's going to happen to this guy who is really just a bit player? Little did we know, in fact, through the story that Norman, in fact, is suffering from some sort of psychosis, and the mother character has actually been dead for a really long time. He assumes the persona of his mother when he does these fits of rage and he kills people. And that's a crazy, like, big twist and plot reveal at the very, very end of the story. But it keeps us on the edge of our seats while we keep layering in these things where we don't know what's going to happen. And so how do we use this in our classroom? Because it's a very long story about maybe one of the best movies of all time. But how do we use suspense and surprise in our classrooms? Giving our kids a pop quiz is a surprise. But telling them, hey, something big is coming at the end of today's class. What is it? You have to wait and see. Well, that's a suspense element. And you can use those things, but you have to deliver on that suspense with something that is of value. If you don't, what happens is you just keep dragging it out like, hey guys, at the end of today's class, something big is going to happen. Don't forget. And eventually they're like, it's candy. It's always candy. Or like, you know, when you do like the breakout EDUs, like what's inside of the box? Don't put things inside of the box. The fun is in the search to what's inside the box, not the actual tangible thing inside of it. Once you put something inside of it, kids start to do that cost-benefit analysis. Like, I don't want candy. I don't want that reward you always give us. So there's a benefit to doing that little bit of a sleight of hand because it keeps them leaning in and it keeps them focused and it keeps them intrigued and engaged because they want to know what's going to happen next. It's like that bit from How I Met Your Mother where they say the word legendary. It's going to be legend, wait for it. And then it goes to like a season break and comes back at the start of the next season and Barney says dairy, right? Like, leaving people on the edge of their seat with like a cliffhanger or a hook. And you can do this at the end of a class or at the end of a unit. And if you time it perfectly, you can even have that clock in your head. You know you have 43 minutes or 48 minutes or 62 minutes to do your class. Hitting it so at the very end, you're like mid-sentence and you're about to give away the key piece puzzle and, oh no, what's going to happen? I don't know. Read the book, guys. We'll find out. Talk tomorrow. But like those little things. Good authors of even like young adult fiction do a great job of every chapter ending with like a mini cliffhanger, which leads you to want to see what happens next. Video games do the same thing. That's why it's like, mom, just one more level, one more thing. Because the second you beat the last guy, it presents you with a new clue or a new wrinkle that moves you forward and maybe a little bit of a new power that you can now use. And you kind of want to try it out. You want to test it. You want to see where it's going. So how can we do that in our classrooms? Those homeworks that we're giving can't just be pro forma because it's there. We do have to have a little bit of that sizzle, that steak, to kind of get them excited and to raise the stakes when they're walking in that there's something of value or worth waiting for them tonight. That the reward for correct answers, to use Doug Liemov's language from Teach Like a Champion, is harder questions. And so we have our students leaning in and asking those questions at every twist and turn in our class. And maybe we use that surprise element early and like, whoa, I never saw that coming. What's going to happen? And then like a Tarantino movie, you work your way back to, we know how this is going to end, but let's see how we got there. And there's a bunch of different ways to do that in your classroom with the way that you're kind of structuring your lesson design. So it's things to think about and keep in mind. Hope this lesson was of some value or note. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to subscribe on iTunes or anywhere else that you're podcasting and listening to. Thank you so much for your feedback. And we'll be back next week on Monday with more. Hit me up on Twitter in the meantime, and let's keep changing the game. Thanks again.